Blog Talk Radio.
Allahu Akbar, Allah.
Welcome, fellow infidels, to another episode of America Akbar. I am Gadi Edelman, and with me tonight, as usual, we've got my co-host and producer, Reese. Say hello, Reese.
Hello, guys.
Say hello a little louder so we can hear you.
Hello a little louder so you can hear me.
That's a little bit better. All right, we've got a great show in store for us tonight. We have got a person calling in by the name of Tom Trento. Anyone who's listened to Radio Jihad in the past certainly knows who Tom is. He's with Florida's Security Council, and he's going to tell us all about his recent trip to Paris. And hopefully everybody was on Facebook today and saw the video, because I reposted it for tonight's show. Have you seen the video, Lise?
I have, but it's been a while. If I haven't seen it within the last day or two, I have a hard time remembering, because it's so much I see betwixt and between. So I probably should rewatch it again.
And I don't know what is going on with the chat room, but I keep getting bumped out. This is the weirdest thing. I'm going to give up on the chat. So now you have another thing you have to watch out for, and you get to watch the chat room since I can't.
It's all right. It's easy to do that, and I just flip back and forth. It's all right.
I've heard that, but anyway.
Hey, wait a minute.
I'm trying to keep my spirits up, because the first thing I want to talk about until Tom calls in, obviously this is the first show that we've had since Saturday's senseless shooting in Arizona. Senseless doesn't even, I don't think there's a word in the English language that can put into perspective the way I personally feel about what took place in Tucson last Saturday. And I just want to let everybody know that our thoughts and prayers, everyone here at Radio Jihad, are with the friends and family members of those that were killed, and of course all those that were injured, for a very quick and speedy recovery, and specifically for Gabrielle Giffords. And I'll just lay this right on the line. Those who know me know that I'm a conservative. I want more than nothing, more than anything, for this woman to make such a full recovery that she can get back on that floor and argue for everything she believes in. And that is my wish and my goal for her, because as much as I disagree with many of her policies and her stances, I want her back on the floor in full 110% health.
Oh, hear.
Today, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because, again, I don't know what word to use, the youngest of all the victims, Christina Taylor Green, was laid to rest in Arizona, and thousands of people came out. And I don't know if everyone listening saw the videos on TV, but when the funeral procession stopped, it stopped underneath the flag. That is a giant flag of many flags sewn together. And if you didn't see it, it's pretty amazing. It was actually all the flags that survived the attack on September 11, 2001, because that was her birthday. And not just her birthday, but the day she was born.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very heart-wrenching. And, our thoughts and prayers go with her family and friends and school classmates. The biggest waste of life, and hard for me to talk about because I have a 12-year-old daughter. And, I just wanted real quick before Tom calls in to have one quick moment of silence for all of the victims, and specifically for Christina. So we're going to just have a moment of silence. Okay, and I will try and recoup myself, because I promised myself I wouldn't get upset on the air, but it's hard not to.
Well, yeah.
Thing.
It wasn't exactly the easiest thing. I remember just that whole day being, that's all I did. That's all I focused on was watching what was coming out minute by minute.
Yeah, it was the same as, you know, we can think back to all the other things that have happened. It was the same as Oklahoma. It was the same as Hood. It was the same on a much smaller scale, thank God, of 2001. And it glues you to the TV. And, you know, I've written and said many times before that it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, whether you're a liberal or a conservative, we all bleed red. And I think, you know, her aide, and his name, forgive me, escapes me, I think it was Daniel, but her aide that held on to her and kept pressure on her wounds until she went to the hospital, actually on the way to the hospital even, because he rode with her in the ambulance.
His speech. He kept a level head.
Yes. His speech the other night during the so-called memorial service, where he said that on Saturday everybody became Arizonans, but more importantly, they all became Americans, really hit home. And for a young 20-something-year-old man, that just, he really does have a good head on his shoulders. And thank God that he was there to help her, because there's no guarantee she would have made it to the hospital.
Well, and like you, Gotti, I don't believe in coincidences. And I think it was all meant that he was supposed to be there, because I do believe that she's meant to continue on with something. She has a major purpose that otherwise she would not have survived.
Well, absolutely, and I'll tell you what, you know, the doctors today, if you didn't see the press conference at the hospital, which they're now holding on a daily basis, the doctors, when asked about miracles, said that, you know, regardless of how they'd love to think about that all this is just medicine, they do themselves believe in miracles. She's been opening her eyes for 10 and 15 minutes at a time. She's moved both her arms and both her legs. And I just want to see her make one heck of a speedy recovery. And I know that we have somebody else on the line here, and hopefully Reese's already screened that.
I'll be right there, okay?
Oh, okay. I'm assuming it's Tom, so we'll find out in a minute. And what we're going to do is we're going to have about an hour with Tom, Tom Trento from Florida Security Council. And then after Tom leaves us, and of course he's more than welcome to stay for the full show, but after, if he decides to leave, then we're going to get into depth on some things that are out in the media right now that are really disturbing about Jared Loughner and just the connections that they're trying to make with him are just outrageous. But we'll get into all that. In the meantime, we've got Tom Trento on the line. So, Tom, welcome. Thank you for calling.
Gaddy, my pleasure to be here and help you wake up America.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We need to get into a different frame of mind, because I'm sitting here on the verge of tears, because we were just talking about Christina Green and the senseless shooting last week in Arizona. So definitely take us in another direction. First, for those who are listeners to my show but not necessarily Radio Jihad in the past, explain who you are and what Florida Security Council is, and we can kind of go from there.
Sure. Well, if you have a Radio Jihad set of viewers and listeners out there, some of them may be aware of my work. It's very, very simple. We are, at this point, on January 13, 2011, in the most critical time that Western civilization has ever faced, and the greatest threat comes from Islam, from the doctrine known as Sharia, and it's dedicated to the destruction of the West. And my work is to try to help stop Sharia Islam from destroying America, Israel, Europe, and establishing a caliphate and catapulting us back into the 7th century.
And everybody can visit Tom's website, the Florida Security Council website, at FloridaSecurityCouncil.org, FloridaSecurityCouncil.org, and we'll give that, and I'm sure Reese, because she's usually a step ahead of me, will paste.
No, not tonight. Behind tonight.
But at some point, she'll paste that in the chat room. Now, you recently had a trip overseas where you visited Paris specifically in Europe and met with some interesting people, and we talked about it on a previous Radio Jihad show, and I just posted your video, of course, the day after you posted it, both on my website and Facebook, but I reposted it again this afternoon for everybody who was going to be listening to tonight's show. and it was the video where you guys filmed all the Muslims blocking the streets illegally in Paris to do their afternoon prayers. And that whole video, by the way, congratulations, it's a wonderful video that speaks volumes. But if you want to tell us a little bit more in depth about that, that would be awesome.
Sure, absolutely. The Florida Security Council, the organization that I run, started about 4 years ago, and almost, Gaddy, almost from day one, we exceeded the boundaries of the state of Florida, because the Ummah, the Nation of Islam, if you will, is borderless. Muslims are united by an ideology, and that goes beyond states. So a lot of my work early on went throughout the United States, and then pretty quickly I wound up in Europe in the beginning of 2009. I went over there with a small team to explore Europe a bit as it related to the Islamic threat, and our work took us to the Netherlands, which used to be called Holland, but now the country is called the Netherlands. There are 16 million people in the Netherlands, and it's a very very unique country. I mean, they sold us Manhattan for you know, in New York for a few bucks, and they'll never let you forget the New Amsterdam. I wound up interviewing the parliamentarian that's very controversial, Geert Wilders. He's a member of Holland Parliament. I interviewed him, and I actually interviewed him. You're not going to believe this. I interviewed him on January 20th, 2009. Do you know what the significance of that date was?
Refresh my memory.
Well, I was standing in this beautiful little town of Den Haag, The Hague, which is essentially the capital. And at 6 o'clock at night, I had just finished interviewing probably one of the chief fighters of Sharia Islam in the world. And I stepped out in a courtyard of this beautiful square, and every 30-something-year-old Hollander was cheering and screaming and yelling in the bars and celebrating. 6 o'clock, January 20th, 2009, was 12 o'clock, Washington, D.C. time, and the new Messiah, the Messiah that Europe thought would get rid of the cowboy Bush and usher in this new Camelot age of love and peace, was being inaugurated in Washington, D.C. I was interviewing Geert Wilders when President Obama was being inaugurated. What a contrast that was.
Yeah, really. Talk about polar opposites. And you know, for calling him the Messiah,
there are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
So that's what he would say. Well, that's, yeah, Geert Wilders, and he's had a time of it in and out of court. He's probably going to be the next prime minister of the Netherlands if his political party maintains their majority. Yeah. More than likely. I mean, is it still looking that way there?
Yeah. He has recently been voted the most popular politician in the Netherlands, and I'll tell you why in a second. His party, which was a fringe party 4 years ago, is now one of the ruling parties. He almost became the prime minister. And he's under indictment, and he's being tried. He's in the middle of a trial for hate speech because of his movie Fitna, which was simply showing from the Quran how Muslims take seriously their scriptures, which they should if they're serious, but the result is destruction of human property and human life.
Yeah,
so let me take you back now, January 2009. Anywhere you walked around in Europe, France, Germany, Netherlands, you saw posters and billboards of Michelle and of Obama all over Europe. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And those of us who understood who Obama was, I spent all of 2008 traveling around the United States trying to tell people you're being scammed. This guy is is not only dangerous, he's devious, he has an agenda, he doesn't like America, he doesn't like the military, he doesn't like capitalism, he doesn't like Israel, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
But no, our country went for him. And you know what I saw last night, you're speaking of the sad events of the last couple of days, do you believe the gushing over on the left because Obama gave this, to me it was a despicable display of campaigning at a solemn moment, but do you believe he's back, that's what he needed, he's reestablished himself. My God, people are looking for a leader where a leader can't be found. It's amazing.
Exactly. Oh, you're absolutely right. And who was it? Rahm Emanuel had said, let no good crisis go to waste. One of his advisors, just this earlier this week, I think it was Monday, if I'm not mistaken, was quoted as saying that Clinton had Oklahoma City and Bush had 9/11. This is his 9/11, and this is where we can get his popularity numbers up again. And I thought,
yeah, these people, I didn't hear that, but these people are whores. I mean, they're political whores. It's a sad commentary on human nature, let me tell you.
Totally.
And it's really, if I can interject, it was very interesting because as soon as that just, it went viral all over the internet and, you know, the news medias and what have you, so Rahm Emanuel felt the need to come out and do a solemn political stance and say, well, this is not what he meant when he said that.
Yeah, well, what did he mean?
Well, let me tell you guys, you don't need to know this, but I'm gonna remind your viewers and listeners. 600, this is the magic number, 662. That's the magic number.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means?
Yeah, until we can get him out of office.
662 days until our revolution on November 6th, 2012, if we do not succeed in getting him out of office, in getting the pro-Islamic, pro-socialist folks he has with him, and he has 4 lame duck years as a president with an executive power pen, he will dismantle the structures of the United States of the West in such a way that we will not recognize in 2016 where we are living. It is that serious, folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. You know, what you said about Europe, the same holds true, which is even scarier when one thinks about it. It was the exact same way in 2008 and 2009 in Israel. There were posters. I never saw so many posters of Obama. And, of course, they were in English and Hebrew. And the Yes, We Can in Hebrew. And the pictures of him and Michelle. And you talk about duping an entire group of people. If it's one group of people that man has done nothing but detach himself from, one of the greatest allies that the United States has, you know, the way he has shunned Israel as a whole, you talk about being taken for a ride and buying into everything that this man said, it's Israel. And it's unfortunate because now the numbers in Israel, much like the United States, are the exact opposite of what they were back when he was running for office. And it's almost like, you know, hindsight's 20/20, guys. You helped put them there.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go to the Florida Security Council, if you know anything about my work, I do a tremendous amount of work. We have 3 objectives in our mission. One is to defend the United States Constitution. That's what we do at the Florida Security Council. We kind of think it's a pretty good document, you know, 236 years old now. We like it. The second objective is to defend the right to Israel's existence as a state. And the third objective is to destroy and defeat any element of Sharia law, Sharia Islam, anywhere in the United States whatsoever. No Sharia, no time, ever. And I'll explain the Sharia thing in a bit. But in that work, people think I'm Jewish. I'm dark-skinned. I look Jewish. I happen to be Sicilian. I'm Italian, and I'm a Christian.
Hey,
Trent. But what are you laughing at?
The name Trento. How could they possibly? It's not Trentowitz.
No. If they don't know my name, if they just see me speaking, they go, that guy's got to be a Sephardic Jew. He's got to be a Sephardic Jew, you know? But in any event, I stand for Israel. You could hate Jews. You shouldn't. But you could.
But as an American, it's essential that we understand Israel is necessary for the national security of the United States of America.
Absolutely.
So for no other reason, it's essential that public policy that supports Israel, when she strikes Iran, which she will have to do, Mr. Obama is going to be faced with an unbelievable decision that I pray for him. I actually do, because he's cursed either way he goes. If he sides with his liberal base and abandons Israel, the Islamic world will cheer him. He will be a hero. But the conservative world, the evangelical community, the conservative Americans are going to go, what the hell is this about? And there's going to be trouble. Conversely, see, when you play the middle line, when you try to present yourself as a healer and a mender and a bringer together, you're not a man of principle. You're a man of principle when you know you got declared enemies. If you try to make everybody your friend, when the tough times come and you have to take a stand, both sides are going after you. Depending on where he goes, he's going to have a hard time, but we cannot capitulate. We need to support Israel. Now, I'll stop for a minute, let you kind of share your thoughts, then I'll bring you back to 2009 in Europe, and I'll take you right up to today and show you why Paris is a fire alarm ringing in the House of the United States to alert us to what will be here in 5 to 10 years.
Wonderful. Well, the applause were for what you just said about Israel. And I can tell you that myself being Jewish and Alan Kornman from Radio Jihad being Jewish, by the powers invested in us, Tom, we can make you an honorary member of the tribe, and you have your choice of Trentowitz or Trento Burr. It's up to you.
Oy vey, okay.
There you go. There you go.
Well, I love you guys, but when you're raised on macaroni and sausage and lasagna, you know, I mean, going to a kosher pickle ain't quite there, you know. The food thing doesn't I'm going to have to stay a nice Italian boy for a while, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you a secret. My mom is from grew up and raised in the Bronx, and she grew up in an Italian neighborhood, my Jewish mother. And she's the only woman I know that she would bring you chicken soup and say abodanza. So I know where you're coming from, believe me.
I like her already. You know, you make good chicken soup. I spent a lot of time in the Orthodox community in different parts of the country. And I've done many, you know, Shabbos dinners at many Orthodox homes. And the chicken soup is always there, and just it's a wonderful time spending Shabbos at an Orthodox home. And, I mean, I really, very, very sweet moments. And, you know, it's kind of ironic because...
What kind of meal would it be without chicken soup? Come on.
I know. And the wine, don't get me started on the wine. I've had a couple of good, you know, I had a couple of good kosher bottles of wine. But when you grow up with your grandfather making the wine and putting the bottle on the table when you're 6 years old and you're drinking a glass of wine, you learn how to like good wine, you know.
There you go.
But in any event, you know, there's a unique thing. And we have a little bit of time, so I'll kind of build out some of the experiences here. Normally on these radio shows, you stick to the point, you make your point. But I want to expand on this Jewish-Christian thing. Mm-hmm. Historically, as we all know, there's been troubled times where Christians have misinterpreted Scripture and abused Jews. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen, I've been a Christian 35 years or whatever, I have never seen the melding, M-E-L-D, and the welding, W-E-L-D, together of evangelical Christians and conservative, not theologically conservative, not the conservative movement, but politically conservative Jews, usually religious Orthodox, joining with conservative Catholics, evangelical Protestants, in this unique group that's not only joined together because we have a common enemy, militant Islam, but joined together on serious biblical and social and human principles at a unique time. It's really a beautiful movement that's taking place. Now, we're not totally there, and when all the stuff I talk about all over the place, I do not hate Muslims. I gave a speech in Paris 2 weeks ago. I said, I'm a Christian. I love my fellow man. I don't hate a human being who has adopted the Islamic faith. If he has chosen to be Sharia compliant, he has become my enemy as an American, and I will fight him as we are fighting in kinetic theaters. In the United States, we're in an information war. A Sharia-compliant Muslim has abandoned the position of being innocent because they have become an enemy of the United States of America politically, and within the bounds of the law, we have to stop them from destroying America. That's a consistent Christian position, even loving the person, but fighting the person because his goal is to be destructive to America. So
absolutely,
any Muslim is welcome if he can pledge allegiance to the United States of America, repudiate, and the naturalization oath says abjure, get rid of his political affiliations when he comes to the U.S. No serious Muslim can do that. You can't leave Islam behind and accept a constitutional democracy. It doesn't work.
No, you're absolutely right. And real quick, before I forget, and I'm sure Reese's put it in the chat room once already, the call-in number, if you'd like to call and you have any questions or comments for anyone here, especially Mr. Trento, the number is 347-857-1380. It's about 8:30 on the East Coast, so in another half hour, cell phone calls become free, and I don't want to hear any excuses. People, light up my phone lines. Anyway, no, you're absolutely right, you know, and I was not surprised to find out, but many people are surprised when I pass it on, that one of the biggest contributors, if not the largest contributor, to the state of Israel in the form of monetary donations is Christian evangelicals in the United States. And a lot of people, when they hear that, especially people in my family and other Jews that are Reformed Jews and Bleeding Heart liberals, they just don't believe it. It just blows their mind when they hear that. But it's very, very true, and that connection is going to be what makes or breaks us. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, without question, and it's really lovely to see from where I'm at. I'm in the middle of some very interesting stuff. And let me take you guys, all you listeners out there, let me take you back to January of 2009. We're in the cold Hague on January 20th. I was in Paris on a few days before that, and let me take you back to December 28th, 2008. Some of you may actually remember this date. No, you won't, because it was December 30th. December 30th, 2008. You may remember this. There was a video that was released on December 30th, 2008. Now, remember, this was right during Gaza, where finally Israel attacked Gaza and the Gaza war was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were demonstrations all over. There was a Hamas-Hezbollah demonstration, not in Beirut, not in Lebanon, not in Syria, not in Jordan, but in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
About 300 Hamas-Hezbollah people. And if you remember the footage, there was a woman, a Muslim woman in a hijab, screaming and yelling for the Jews to go back in the ovens. Jews go back in the ovens. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. It's on my website, I believe.
All right, well, that was taken on December 30th, 2008. And how do I know that? Because I was holding the camera that shot that video. The way that came about, I heard there was going to be a Hamas demonstration, and there were some Jews and Christians who were going to protest across the street. So I went to the thing, and I was going to stand with the Jews and Christians. There were maybe 25, 30, you know, typical Jewish-Christian demonstration, you know, me, one or two others, and 25, 80-year-olds.
Right.
Gotta love those guys. I mean, they fight with all kinds of vigor. They're walkers and they're canes. and they're out there. Well, when I was standing on the corner in Fort Lauderdale, if any of your listeners have been there, this is not too far from the ocean, beautiful, wonderful city of Fort Lauderdale on Broward Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
I looked across the street. I said, you know what, I'm going to go stand on the other side and just see if I can kind of mingle with the crowd. So I got over there, and like I said, I'm Italian, I'm dark-skinned, I look like a Middle Eastern. And I was able to move among 300 Palestinians very simply. They didn't know who I was at that point. And I filmed this thing. I put it up on YouTube that night. And, you know, usually you get 100, 200 viewers, 300. Hundreds of thousands of hits. The thing went all over the world. And 2 weeks later, I was in Paris, and I filmed on Rue Rivoli, right in front of the Louvre, another Hamas demonstration in support. This is in Paris. Now, here's the warning to America from Paris. We had 300 people gathered in Fort Lauderdale, which was shocking.
Mm-hmm.
I stood in the middle of 15,000 Hamas Hezbollah supporters. It was a frightening experience. Videotaping them, taking over Paris, smashing windows, burning the Israeli flag, burning the American flag, and the police and the authorities simply letting them go because they could not control 15,000 people if they rioted. Thank God they didn't riot. But that occurred 2 weeks later, the beginning. Then a few days later, I was with Geert Wilders. A couple of days after that, I met with 10 French resistance fighters in an underground meeting, and they're asking, what can we do? That's how I got involved in helping the folks who are now doing the filming of the Muslims praying and taking over the streets of Paris. So that started 2 years ago. I'll stop here, let you guys ask any questions, and then I'll take you right to today to how one individual has changed the world because he had the guts, or she had the guts, to go out and do something. And that's going to be motivation for your listeners.
Oh, absolutely. I already know who you're referring to. I want to take you back a bit further, Tom. I want to ask how you started all this. What got you involved? You know, where were you mentally? Did you even know or had you ever even heard of Sharia law on September 11, 2001, or is this something that came about because of what happened that day? How did this all start for you?
Well, I had a sincere interest in becoming a millionaire and basking in wealth. And so I said, let me become an activist because there's so much money to be made in activism that that's got to be the way to do it, right?
You're wrong.
That's sort of a very bad facetious joke.
Yeah.
Because anybody involved in this work, I used to have a business that was like maybe successful. It isn't anymore. Anybody involved in this work, when you become serious at it, you get consumed with the necessity of fighting evil and stabilizing justice in the American way, and it takes over your whole life. And that's a whole other story. But on September 11th, 2001, I was in my house, and I was watching the news, you know, the breaking news, and I grew up in Jersey, and as a kid, I watched the two towers go up. In fact, my father, who is still alive, 87 years old, is still a Teamster, you're always a Teamster, truck driver, he delivered scaffolding to those buildings. And I watched him go up as a kid. You could see him not too far from where I lived in Jersey. And you can see him from anywhere in New York or New Jersey, basically.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw them go down, I knew that my life would change. You see, I had a career as a Christian activist. I have a background in a law enforcement degree, a theology degree, a philosophy degree. So I was an analyst, an expert on religions, and I understood the Islamic faith very, very well. And that was in the 80s and early 90s. when 9/11 hit, I knew in a second what it was all about. I knew I'd be back on the front lines. And what I did, I went on a self-study to sharpen up on Islamic doctrine, the various schools. You see, it's critically important, and you guys know this, but for your listeners, it's in order to defeat an enemy, you have to understand what the enemy believes, because their threat doctrine is established by their belief system. You know, I don't know if you know, but I just participated in writing a book with 18 other national security experts called Sharia, the Threat to America. And our book simply says to the Obama administration, you got it wrong. You don't understand how the enemy is thinking. You're not calling the enemy by the right name. You're putting the United States in a deficit position. Therefore, you're doing a disservice, a treasonous disservice to American citizens. So as an analyst, I understood how Islamic militant people think so that you can defeat them. But I went in even deeper, and I studied under Waleed Faris and others and for 5 years. And then I saw in November of 2006, and every day of those 5 years, I was very frustrated that I wasn't on the front line. But I was in boot camp, learning, preparing. And then in October, November of 2006, I saw a phenomenal documentary called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. Have you guys seen that?
Absolutely.
When I saw that, I said, I did like the three letters, OMG, oh my God, who are these people? They know what's going on. I got in touch with the filmmakers, who were four rabbis out of Israel, and from November of 2006 to today, I've been working with them every single day in one capacity or another on their films, and we just released the third documentary called Iranium, which establishes the Iranian nuclear threat to the free world. So I had a background. 9/11 was the catalyst for further study. Further study resulted in seeing Obsession, which resulted in me saying, I got to form an organization. 2007, I formed Florida Security Council, and I'm about to unveil a new organization in the next month or so, which will be a more national and international organization dealing with all countries united by Western civilization principles against Islam. We've really got to crank this thing up and increase the offensive nature of our information war.
Exactly. Well, I don't know whether or not you're at liberty to, but are you able to discuss the new organization you're unveiling?
I could give you some general information. When I met with the guys in Paris 2 years ago, I said, you know, I'll train you guys as grassroots activists. And the, you know, wine-sipping, foie gras, cheese-eating, you know, nice French folks never said, what the hell is grassroots activism, right?
Right.
I mean, they are clueless as to how to impact public policy in a socialist country.
Of course.
Because in socialist countries, you receive benefits from the state, and when they do that, when anybody is giving you stuff, they own you in a very real sense. So how do you criticize somebody that owns you?
Exactly.
So they were clueless. It got to a point of the Islamization of France, where they're starting to fight back, and one of the individuals took a hidden camera and went out and started shooting Muslims taking over the streets. He put those videos up, the world noticed, and the result was on December 18th of this past year, a summit was held in Paris, a summit designed to bring together grassroots leaders from around Europe. It was a European summit to stop the Islamization of Europe. I was invited by this group. really is the only speaker from the United States to say what we're doing in the United States to stop Islam, particularly the Ground Zero mosque situation.
Right.
The name of my talk was The United West, One Team, One Fight. And I argued, and you can see it online. It can be found. I gave it in English because that's the only language I speak, so it's a pretty good reason to give it in English. You know, I could stumble my way through tourist Italian, but I can't talk about your worldview and your philosophical analysis in any other language. But my proposition on December 18th, just a few weeks ago, was that the Ummah, the nation of Islam, is borderless, but they're united on these unique Islamic principles known as Sharia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're monolithic in a very real sense. So the West is fighting uniquely in an independent fashion this monolithic movement that is gaining ground and becoming an irresistible force. So my argument was the West needs to unite, and we need to unite and have one team in one fight. And that's what I laid out in my talk. And I can just kind of tell you that the organization that I'm unveiling in about a month will have that purpose, to unite Western countries, which is going to be Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Israel. Israel is a Western country in the middle of the Middle East, but it's a Western country, to unite all of us together to fight the Ummah, the nation of Islam, when it becomes Sharia compliant. So that's the organization. It's going to have a national, international angle to it. Very aggressive. Now, when I say fight, I'm not talking in a kinetic sense with guns and bullets and all of that. Sadly, we're in two theaters, and we need to be, because when you take Sharia to its ultimate conclusion, you're allowed to kill the infidel.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, we have a sufficient rule of law where Muslims are not in a position to do that. And hopefully, many of the Muslims that are here, particularly second generation, they repudiate Sharia, and they want to be part of the democratic process, at least theoretically. We haven't seen much proof of that, but that's giving that second-generation group the benefit of the doubt. Our war here is an information war, a philosophical war, a political war, a stealth war. Those are the tools I'm talking about when I talk about combat and fighting. Intellectually exposing the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, turning them over to the authorities, getting them arrested, getting them put in jail, using the rule of law.
Exactly. Now, I got to ask, and then I want to correct one thing that I saw in the chat room. The organization that you're working on unveiling next month, did you have any dealings with a person during the getting this together with a person from Arizona?
What is that, a trick question?
Because I think I heard about this through somebody else in Arizona, and I just was wondering if it was the same organization.
Let's just say in the course of my work, I have been to Arizona, okay?
Yeah, it is. Okay. We'll
so you're getting warm. You're getting warm.
Yeah, no, I know. We'll definitely discuss it later because I understand keeping things under wraps. Now, I do want to correct one thing that was posted in the chat room. It stated that you had gone and spoken at the EDL, and I don't want people to confuse EDL with the English Defense League. This was the European Defense League. And the EDL, as far as I'm concerned, the one that's known as the English Defense League, is a bunch of nuts that are almost terrorists themselves and fall into that same category as the JDL here, the Jewish Defense League. So I just wanted to clear that up for people reading in the chat room. You spoke at the European Defense League, correct?
No, to be technical, there is no European Defense League. The summit, it was called the Congress on
Europe to stop the Islamist. The Congress to stop the Islamization of Europe, or the summit to stop the Islamization of Europe. Now, members of various countries, about 15, there were 21 speakers, about 10 or 15 countries were represented, and Tommy, whatever his name is, from the EDL in England was actually invited to speak at this. He did not show up, and there was a whole mixture. I mean, there was a Marxist who was speaking, who is anti-Sharia Islam. There were socialists. There was a whole hodgepodge of various political positions, but everybody said, we're fed up with Islam. But I tell you, some of the folks, because the EDL from England was invited, some of the folks, some politicians actually in Europe said, oh, I'm not coming if they're coming.
Exactly.
Because right now the EDL in England, English Defense League, is either hated or loved, and I think both positions are a little too far. I'm getting to know more about them. I haven't met anybody from there yet, but I'm getting to know some folks about it. The guy from the Dutch Defense League was there, but he's kind of brand new at this. And from what I'm understanding of these defense leagues, they're growing out of the blue-collar movement, street people, regular people, fed up. And in the EDL, there were anti-Semites. There was some, from what I understand, some white supremacist influence. Supposedly they've weeded that out. A friend of mine, a rabbi from California, Rabbi Shifrin, was just invited by the EDL that's developed a Jewish division of the English Defense League to support Israel, was their featured speaker for about a week in England. So the EDL, like any movement, is trying to figure out what it's all about. It's
right.
Too soon to tell where it's going to wind up. But all I know is Europeans are awakening. And just like with our revolution, you get a whole mixture of, stuff until a theme develops. And we're going to work with these guys, particularly the ones that are going by the rule of law, to establish some procedures as to how to change public policy. It's a lot different in a socialistic country. It's not that easy, but we got to help them. We got to work together.
Do you actually think, Tom, that given where we are today in Europe, throughout Europe, especially France and England, that it can be turned around?
No.
I don't think so. That's why I was asking, because I think at this point it's an uphill battle. And I think we need to use them as an example here and in other countries where it hasn't gotten that far to say, this is where you're going to end up. Let's put a stop to it now.
Yeah, and this is a fascinating area of discussion, because if any of your listeners were trying to run to the bathroom and missed what we just said, question is it too late to save Europe, or is the Islamization too far advanced?
Mm-hmm.
The analytical answer is there are certain countries that have the capability to reverse the problem and probably hold off being fully Islamized, like the first and second jihad coming out of the Arabian Peninsula, and the second jihad stopping at the gates of Vienna. I mean, Egypt originally was a Christian country,
right?
And Muslims took it over. So Muslims can take over a country and convert everybody, and it changes. That could very well happen to Europe. It looks like certain countries have a chance to postpone that, and France probably does not. Listen to this. And this is the story that we're going to tell in our documentary that we're going to be doing on our trip. Basically, Tom Trento's warning from Paris to America. There's 65 million people in Paris, in France. 10%, about 6.5, 7 million Muslims. Comparatively, we have 330 million Americans and 1%. Or a little less than 1% is Muslim. Look at all the problems we're having with Islam in America at 1%. France has 10 mm-hmm. times the number. From a demographic perspective, if you look at, okay, good guys and bad guys, you know, if you just put them in two categories, the bad guys, Sharia-compliant Muslims, are going to be populating at twice, three times, four times the rate of the cheese-eating, wine-drinking Frenchmen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just look at the actuarials. Look at math. This group is going to overtake that group, and in a democracy, 50% plus one runs the show. Listen to this now. That's fact number one. Fact number two, 250,000 immigrants are let into France every year. 200,000 of the 250,000 are Muslims. Now, we have Muslims already at 10%, already populating. Now we're adding 200,000 each year in France. Another 100,000 are coming in illegally through Spain and through porous borders. Virtually all 300,000 go immediately on the public dole. They get food, shelter, clothing, medical care, education for many, 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 many years because the French socialistic mindset believes that the greater good is to take care of those who have given everything to come and make their existence in the beautiful land of France.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand that deadly viruses implant themselves in beautiful female and male human bodies to destroy the cells and eventually destroy the body. So the French now have 300,000 coming in, sucking the money out of the treasury, and populating, exponentially increasing the growth rate. It's virtually impossible to save France.
Absolutely. Yeah, the numbers are against them, there's no doubt. And I'll tell you something which you may or may not already know. I recently spoke with a friend of mine who just got back from Israel, and she was telling me, you know, normally the last time I was in Israel, you know, and I grew up in Israel, the walking around the street, you would hear two languages. You heard Hebrew and you heard Russian, and that's because of the amount of Russians that have immigrated to Israel. It's a very common language over there. Pardon me. And she was telling me that while she was in Tel Aviv, you heard three languages this time around, and it was Hebrew, Russian, and French. And the reason that French is becoming so prominent in Israel is the amount of people that are Jewish that live in France that are immigrating to Israel because they're afraid to stay in their own country.
Absolutely. Now watch how frightening this gets. There's probably a majority of the European nations are on that same track, demographic and sociological track. As you know, Europe has elected or established a European Union,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially Washington, D.C. for the 23 states of Europe. They have the European Union. It serves as a federal center. And the currency, for the most part, has been changed to the euro.
Mm-hmm.
The inter-country travel, they have unique passports where if you get into one country, you can go into all the countries. With a European passport. So it's becoming borderless in many respects, which means the locus or the center of law is moving from a nationalistic perspective for each country being sovereign over their own people to a usurpation and a delegation of law to the European Union. And the European Union is starting to write laws that supersede nation laws in Europe. And there's furious Europeans that want to end the European Union, but the socialistic mindset is this one European mode will compete better with China and with the United States economically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you start to look at Europe as one entity, and
and the Muslim populations increase and get control of the European Union in 20 years. Now we have the Middle East with all the oil reserves and Europe being Muslim entities. The United States is absolutely target number one for economic problems and oil problems in
right.
10, maybe 15 years. We will be so isolated that we will be living, we will not be, no one's going to be able to travel to Europe if it's Islamized. Absolutely not. I mean, this world is changing dramatically. Now, we have a unique actor who would like to increase the destabilization of the world with the Persian bomb. I'll stop for a minute, and then I'll tell you how the Persian bomb will bring about probably the apocalypse.
No, don't stop. I know where you're at. I mean, we're at 1 hour right now. If you want to take a quick break, we can. And I can play a song in the meantime, and we can come back after that. It's totally up to you. If you want to keep going, go right ahead.
Well, I got to get going, but let me sum this up by, and then I'm sure your callers will call in, and then you can handle that. As you can see, when you start to take your freaking head out of the sand, folks, and look at what's happening in the world around you, you start to say, oh, my God. Well, it's happening because people have their heads in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Muslims don't. They got their blinders on. The establishment of the caliphate and Sharia law through the entities of the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE and ISNA and ICNA, all these proxy groups, that's their goal. They're empowered by Allah. They're willing to give their lives, and they're winning the battle right now worldwide. That's the dynamic that's occurring. When you look at that, it's very disheartening. But we're fighters. Americans are fighters, and we need to rise to the occasion. I think we can. We can defeat radical Islam, Sharia Islam in the United States. We got to get tough. We got to get rid of Obama as the president. We can do it. But here's the unknown. Muslims are animated by their theology, as are most political movements, interestingly enough, particularly totalitarian ones.
Mm-hmm.
We have most Muslims are Sunni. 85% of the 1.3 billion are Sunni Muslims. 10-15% are Shia, the Iranian Muslims. There's about 80 million Iranians. And for the most part, they agree on the essentials of Sharia. They have a different view of how you continue the authority structure of Islam, whether it's through a caliphate or whether it's through the family of Muhammad. Notwithstanding that, when Iran gets the Persian bomb, we already have an Arab bomb in Pakistan.
Yes.
The Arabs are not Persians. They're different cultures. Their religion is the same, Islam, but their cultures are different. So we're going to have a Persian bomb, which has much more, a very rich history, Persian history of being global leaders. So the establishment of the Persian caliphate through the 12th imam, the hidden imam, the Mahdi, all this bizarre theology, which is very real, and Ahmadinejad believes he is the forerunner to the hidden imam who must come back when a third of the world is blown up, approximately a third of the world or all of Israel is destroyed. The Mahdi can come back. So when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says we've got to get rid of Israel and America, he's willing to ignite an EMP or any sort of nuclear device over Israel, over the United States, knowing full well that he's going to lose a good portion of his country, but it doesn't matter because it's that cataclysmic event that brings the Mahdi back, and once the M-H-A-D-I, the Mahdi, comes back, he's essentially Islam's Jesus Christ, he will defeat all Jews, all Christians,
everyone will be united, and Iran will be held up by the Mahdi as the heroes of eternity, because
right.
they brought the Mahdi back. This is the end game for Ahmed Ahmadinejad, and he's playing it out. Now listen to this. Guess who just came back from Iran to Iraq, made a speech last week. Now bombs are blowing up in Iraq today again. Guess who that was?
Oh, that had to be their, what's his name? Not Prime Minister. Is it Prime Minister or the President there?
No. Remember the Imam Mahdi, the crazy young guy who was leading the Mahdi army in Iraq, which was an Iranian-controlled group of Iraqi fighters under the Imam Mahdi, the Mahdi army. He was deported, essentially, by the Iraqis when America was there with strength to Iran, and he trained in Iran and now came back and said, we need to fight Americans again on our soil, Iraq. And today we had explosions all over Iraq at American bases and all of that. The Imam Mahdi is back. Not the 12th Imam, he just has the same name.
Right.
But he's supposed to be a precursor also. So we have a bizarre Shia theology fusing with an Islamic geopolitic, all coming together in the unique form of an atomic bomb, with individuals that want to see human flesh ignited and consumed to bring about a wonderful, glorious beginning for Islam.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't remember when it was stated, and I wish I could pull it up, but it would make too much noise on my computer. But Ahmadinejad, this question was actually posted back when he first started and came clean to the world and said that they were building these, you know, enrichment plants. And someone asked him the question, and I believe it was when he was in the States a couple of years ago at the UN, and he spoke at Columbia University, that if he used, because he had made the statement openly that he planned on wiping Israel off the face of the earth, his words, someone asked him, you know that when that happens, that your country is going to be bombed in retaliation with nuclear weapons. And his answer, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't remember the exact quotes, but his answer was, yeah, I'll lose a couple of million people. I can live with that.
Yeah, so, the number's 20 million. The number that they're willing to lose is 20 million to destroy Israel. And the reason why the United States and the Soviet Union never blew each other to kingdom come is because of that doctrine, as we all know, MAD, mutually assured destruction.
Exactly.
The Soviet Union, as crazy as it was, and maybe still is, it really was built on Judeo-Christian principles of human beings having value. And the Politburo saw that human life is a good thing, particularly when you then take that and become a communist with no afterlife. You just, as Bertrand Russell said, you become, when you die, a banquet for the worms. So the communists running the Soviet Union are saying, you know, we kind of like this life and the beauty we have and
exactly.
the treatment. Why do we want to blow each other up? Mutually assured destruction is an enhancement. It's a goal to Sharia-compliant Muslims. That's what they want to do. That's where we have a – and you know what? I could be furious that our government – if I say – when I say this stuff – people think myself and me, people on Team B and people that are experts in this are nuts when we talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
All we're doing is explaining the enemy's threat doctrine. The United States government is missing it so badly. They have a moral and professional obligation to understand this. Otherwise, they're guilty of treason. There's documents that say that in our law, and we've got to start holding these people responsible. Muqtada al-Sadr is the guy from Iraq who's the imam who has the Al-Mahdi army. You'll
yes.
see, you go read about what he's doing now. I think we are winding down. I would be surprised if, I wouldn't be surprised if you hear the announcement of the Persian bomb in Iran, a test or something, within calendar year 2011. And then we're screwed, man. We are so screwed, it isn't funny.
No, it's going to lead to a third world war. There's no doubt about it. Israel is going to do what it has to do to defend itself. I've said this before. Benjamin Netanyahu, the current prime minister of Israel, became the prime minister, ran his campaign, and won on the fact that he put Israel's security first. He's not going to stand for a nuclear power of Iran. And, you know, what worries me is if this occurs while Obama is president, is rather than choosing a side, he'll do nothing at all.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be very, very difficult to do nothing when the UN needs a veto from the United States to stop the, you fill in the blanks of whatever the UN is going to do to Israel. Now, if he does nothing, if he says we're going to abstain, well, he's voting to destroy Israel. But
exactly.
when Congress calls for him to sign an order sending equipment, look, Israel, from an intelligence point of view, Israel needs to make it to increase the success of the strike. They need tremendous resources that we have, our electronic surveillance, electronic jamming capabilities to jam the missile defense systems that are in place protecting the sites around Natchez and Beersheba and all these different places. They need some of our weapons to go down deep into the dirt. Together, we could knock them out. But let's say together we go strike Iran and we don't kill one innocent civilian. We just knock out the nuclear capability. What's the other side has a dog in this fight. And whenever you start constructing offensive scenarios, you always got to say, what's the other guy going to do? And then what's the other guy going to do next, and next? If we can do surgical strikes and destroy their nuclear capability, that's not just viewed from the Islamic world as a military or political move. That's viewed as an affront to Allah, because Allah has blessed the Persians to have a bomb to get rid of the Jews. So
mm-hmm.
now we blasphemed Allah. And that narrative will be used to incite rioting worldwide against any and everything Jewish.
Well, that's why I think the United States, especially someone like Obama, would choose to abstain or sit it out, because they know what will happen if they side with the Jews, which is the way the Arab countries and Muslims will look at it. You know, America, the big Satan, has sided with the little Satan. See, we were right all along, and now they're attacking us. And that is exactly the reason why I think someone like Obama would just sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, but he's not a third-string guy. He's the coach of the team. When the other team is running the ball all over, everybody turns to the coach and go, what do you want us to do? The coach can't say, I don't know what we're supposed to do in this game. He's got to say, punt, stop, whatever. Or if he doesn't, somebody on their team is going to make the decision. So, look, we've got to – I don't want to leave on such a negative note, but we've got to this whole Stuxnet is very fascinating too. The virus that was implanted, most likely that was a joint operation of the – a deal was cut, most likely. Israel was going to strike Iran, and there was going to be worldwide chaos. And the Brits, the Soviets, Americans, Germans got together and told Israel, you can't do this. They said, screw you. We're doing it, or help us stop Iran. You don't want to do sanctions. You don't want to do anything. The target, the bullseye is not on your head. It's on our head.
Exactly.
And the collaboration was the development of a computer virus, because the equipment, they have an internal system. They don't use an internet system
for their missile technology and production. So all that stuff was purchased somewhere.
Exactly.
And when you purchase it from another country, they keep all the codes and all of that. So the thing was developed by many nations, Stuxnet, and then it had to be introduced through spies, which they're all over the place. If we can keep them from developing the bomb before 2012, and we get Obama out of office and put in a general that's fought in these wars, somebody with balls to say to the Islamic world, no further, or we're going to knock your head out of the park, because sadly, Sharia-compliant Muslims only understand brute force.
Exactly.
If we can do that, there's a chance for postponing this cataclysmic view that I had. But that's a you know, when you have Jews gushing the wonders of Obama yesterday speaking, and Jews in Israel still supporting him, some on the left,
mm-hmm.
you go, God, if people being targeted can't figure this out, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
Exactly.
So anyway, guys, I got to get going. It was great.
Tom, keep in touch. I appreciate you being on this evening. Wonderful, wonderful conversation. Everybody go and visit FartaSecurity.org, FartaSecurityCouncil.org, pardon me, and look at some of the things. One of the things I think you had wanted to touch on and we didn't get a chance was Rivka Barry, and there's a whole section on your website on her. So definitely, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. You're welcome at any time, open invitation. And you and I need to stay in touch anyway, because I do want to talk to you about this Arizona connection.
Sounds good. And call me anytime, Gaddy. Thanks, guys. Always my pleasure speaking on this stuff and helping out however I can. And just as a quick note, Rivka is, as people know, she has cancer. She's doing pretty well right now.
Good.
She is hidden away somewhere in the world under a different name. And just taking some time to clear her head, get healthy, and you may or may not hear from her in the future, but she's doing great.
Give her our love and let her know that people are pulling for her to pull through this, and bigger miracles have happened, and she can definitely get through this.
Amen. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. You have
bye-bye.
A great day.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wonderful, wonderful conversation. Leaves us only 47 minutes, Reese.
Oh, my goodness, and there's still so much to talk about.
There is so much to talk about. I want to put on one of my favorite songs, which will give me enough time to go to the kitchen and get a cup of coffee and heat it up and put my vanilla cream in it and come back before the song ends. So,
hey, there you go.
Any questions or anything from the chat room that we need to cover before we go on break?
They've been enjoying the conversation with Tom and just, you know, making a few comments along the way, but, you know, it's pretty much what's being discussed, and so it was very interesting.
It was. It wasn't what he initially came in for, but that's usually what happens when you get into one of these conversations about Islam or Sharia compliance. It just goes off on so many, there's so many different ways it can go. It's like a spider web. And
yeah.
There are so many different things that it could go to, but I'm glad that we got that topic in there, because the Iranian, or as he called it, the Persian bomb, is one of the things that we'd want to discuss. But we're going to take a quick break. Hopefully you guys like this song as much as I do, and I'm going to play Joe Dan Media's Live to Die, and we will be back in a couple minutes.
If one wants to find out what is motivating radical Islam, surely it's more sensible to look at what they actually say they're doing and what their intentions actually are.
They are not suicide bombers, they are heroes.
Indeed, we believe that one day the flag of Islam will fly over the White House.
Strap bombs on your children in the name of your God. Fly planes into buildings in the name of your God.
Thank you. What's going on, ma'am?
I'm dying. That's what's up. Oh my God.
Okay, let me transfer you. I'm gonna get online, okay?
Well, police suspect the girl's father in the killing, the father who had apparently threatened one of the girls over her dating a non-Muslim boy.
And this idea that you have moderate Muslims and you have radical Muslims is complete nonsense. A Muslim is the one who submits to the command of the Creator. If he submits, he is a practicing Muslim. If he is not, then he should be practicing.
I have to disagree with him because Islam is a religion of pluralism that embraces all religions, and it also embraces different interpretations. This is why we have so many schools of thought.
There are many people who are justifying their inability to practice the Sharia to say, well, I have a different form of religion. You know, people want to claim that they're vegetarians and they're eating big beef burgers. You know, you cannot be a non-practicing vegetarian. Therefore, similarly, you know, if you're a Muslim, you submit to the Sharia.
He's telling the truth.
And we are back. Thank you for letting me play that song in its entirety. It gets me every time. That is an awesome song. We got to have Joe Dan Meade on again, Reese.
Yep, I agree. Well, and he just released, he's releasing a new song that's political as opposed to, you know, about Islam. But he thought it was rather fitting because, you know, the song is about basically censorship. And twice the song has been banned, both from YouTube and from Vimeo now. It has been and is continued to be over on WhoTV.us, and he will not be banned from that site on any of his songs, but especially this one.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I've had to change on my own website. If you click over at GottiEdelman.com, if you click on the tab that says Important Videos, his was the first video that you see. And I've had to change it twice already, and now I'm going to have to go in and change it yet again because the previous place he was using to host it now banned it. So I'm just going to tie it into WooTV, and hopefully that'll stay up, like you said, and that won't be banned off of my website. But,
right.
Did have a lot to cover here. I wanted to use the last 40 minutes that we have left, and people, please feel free to call in. I want to hear everybody's comments and opinions on this. I'm glad to see there's a lot of people in the chat room tonight. The number to call in is 347-857-1380. And I'm going to get Reese to write a jingle for that so he can be like 347-857-1380. But yeah, we
I'll see what I can come up with. I know Trey Martin.
We'll come up with a jingle for it so it'll be easier to remember. I don't know, maybe it spells out anti-Sharia or something. We'll have to take a look at the numbers on the phone. But anyway, 347-857-1380. I do want to get everybody's comments on this. The new things that have come out, you know, this whole mess with Arizona last Saturday, it wasn't even, as we've all heard, anybody who watches Sean Hannity is well aware, it wasn't even 2 hours had gone by. They didn't even know the name of the shooter, and already they were saying, you know, he was a right-wing conservative, he was an anti-Semite, he was a Tea Party member, it was because of Sarah Palin targeting that specific area, that congressional Congress district on her map with a bullseye. And, you know, Sarah, by the way, God bless her heart, she's, you know, I don't agree with Sarah on a lot of different things, but say what you will about her, she has now received more death threats over this past week because of this whole incident of people tying her in some way, shape, or form to this lunatic's mind over trying to assassinate Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. So, you know, the whole thing is ridiculous, but what's making the media now, which has really, really just, oh, to say it got my blood boiling. If anybody saw my article, it actually came out on Sunday of last week, rather than on Monday, which is my normal day for my articles to come out. That whole article was about the connections that were being made, supposedly, between the shooter, suspected alleged shooter, Jared Loughner, and a organization known as American Renaissance. And I wrote an entire article called Anti-Semitic or Anti-Government, which almost got pulled off of a couple of websites because they felt that I was putting the group American Renaissance in a good light. And American Renaissance has been – they have connections to other groups that are anti-Semitic. So all I went by was my own research. I actually spoke to the founder and editor of American Renaissance, and I wrote this article, and I based everything off of my research in a matter of hours and my conversational, my personal conversation with their founder, and I wrote this article. Lo and behold, the very next day, all of a sudden, all these other investigative reporters are coming out with articles that are much more detailed about both American Renaissance and this supposed memo that had come out by the Department of Homeland Security saying that Jared Loughner had connections or some kind of ties to this anti-government, anti-immigration, anti-ZOG, and that stands for Zionist Occupational Government, anti-Semitic group. All these other investigative reporters came out and not only backed up what I had found, but went even a step farther, and it turned out that Fox News was the only news agency to receive this memo. Nobody else got it. And it was many, and well, I won't say many, some of the investigative reports that I read, turns out that it was spoon-fed specifically to Fox News by the Department of Homeland Security, the Obama administration, to try and tear down a right-wing organization. And they ran with it. They did absolutely no investigating themselves. They started reporting that this kid had ties to American Renaissance. They started reporting that this group was anti, you know, government, anti-immigration, anti-Zionism, anti-Semitic, and none of it.
Anti-everything.
True. So, you know, say what you will about this group. I don't agree with the group. They've got their own agenda. To put it into simple terms for people who aren't familiar with American Renaissance, basically American Renaissance is and the name of the guy just slipped my mind. Who's the Dr. Savage? That's his name. The radio host Dr. Savage on steroids. That's basically what this group is. They believe in cultures, language, border. They believe in the United States is losing their culturism because of multiculturalism, and they the problem with this site, as I see it, is they are a not so much, I don't want to call them a white supremacist group, but they get very heavily involved in race, and they believe that the only way the United States will maintain its culture is by maintaining a white race. So, you know, say what you will about them. I wrote the article, and it turned out that, lo and behold, I was correct. But here's what's come out recently, and this is really disturbing, because now what's happening is articles are coming out, and Reese, I emailed you or sent you the article today. Did you get a chance to read it?
Yeah.
This
I didn't get a chance to take a shower after reading and doing some research.
Well, this really cracks me up, because they've taken it, they, whoever they are, the great they, whenever we talk about they, someone went and took out of thin air. I mean, they just made it up. They have gone and stated that not only was the shooter, Jared Loughner, Jewish, but his family was a member of the same synagogue as Gabrielle Giffords. Now,
well, what this, sorry, just because I went a little bit deeper since I had a little bit more time to dig. And what it is that apparently Mother Jones, which is a far left, basically a yellow rag, some people think it's real news, but it's a far left, and they're proud to be a far left media source, and they had one article stating that the Jared Loughner's family, or Jared Loughner, his best friend, had said that his family was Jewish.
Right.
And that his mother Amy is, you know, goes to the same synagogue as Gabrielle. And so there's all this connection that basically what they're trying to paint, especially because this one group that you saw the article linked from, boy, that was a fun place to visit. Their concern is that Jared Lochner is painted as a white person who attacked a Jewish person, so they do not want to have any connection of white people being, you know, attacking a Jewish person. You'll get the Jewish pity thing going on. So now they can say, because of this one article that has no proof of evidence of any kind, they don't have solid sources, anything that I could find in the article to go with, without having had time to contact, of course, the synagogue or anything, it's hard to really say. But their whole thing is now it's a Jew-on-Jew crime, and therefore it has nothing to do with white people, and they're fine.
Well, let me interject here, because here's the problem. It doesn't matter if it's just one article or not. And I only sent you an article because now there's new articles out that are saying that not only was he Jewish, but he was a Jewish Satan worshiper, which I can tell you there is no such thing. But
that's what it's coming. That's what it's stemming from, because I'm reading through the thread, and that's what they were doing. They're saying we need to make this viable. I emailed everybody. I said this and this, and that's what they. It basically they took just that one article and they expanded on it.
Well, let me read the article so that listening.
Right.
I want everybody listening to hear what this article states, because it's very deceiving in the way they talk about it. Yes, they do mention, supposedly, and again, we have no way of knowing that this person is his best friend. They do mention his best friend in the article, but it's in the second or third paragraph down. And I'm going to quote the article. It says, quote, "We now learn that Jared Lee Lochner's mother, Amy Lochner, is a member of the same Reform synagogue as Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. That means that Amy's son, who lives with his Jewish parents, Amy and Randy, is also a member of the same synagogue as his shooting victim, Representative Giffords. Why didn't we hear about this from our super sleuth national media? Instead, we hear that a white man is the shooter. We hear that anti-Semitism is his motive. Mass mind control, anyone? But now some facts are leaking out. His best friend, Bryce Tierney, who got a farewell voice message the night before the shootings, tells us that his friend is Jewish. He tells us that Jared Lochner put Mein Kampf down as a favorite reading only to irritate his Jewish mother, Amy." And the story continues. Now, I did a little bit of Journalism 101. They made fun of me the other night on Radio Jihad. We were talking about this. God forbid you actually check things. I called the synagogue in Arizona today. And I spoke to a very nice individual who said that someone would get back to me. And not only did they get right back to me within less than a half an hour, but they sent me an email with a statement from the synagogue. So let me read the statement that they sent me, because this puts it all to rest. This is actually from the synagogue. "Thank you for contacting us regarding the Lochner family and congregation Chaverim. We have researched our records back to the year 1980 and can make the following statement. No member of the Lochner family is a member of Congregation Chaverim. Furthermore, a review of membership records over the past 31 years, which is, by the way, I'll interject here, since they were founded, over the past 31 years, indicates that at no time was anyone with that last name a member of this congregation. In addition, we are unaware of anyone from that family ever attending any function in our synagogue. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact me," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they added at the end of this statement, "Congregation Chaverim would like to thank everyone for their outpouring of love and support during this difficult time and tell you how much we appreciate the kind words of sympathy and friendship we are receiving from the Tucson community and across the country. We understand the family of Gabrielle Giffords has requested that donations be made to the Community Food Bank, and donations to Congregation Chaverim's General Fund are also welcome. Our prayers and thoughts go out to all those who were affected by this terrible tragedy, with blessings of Shalom," which means peace. So they are aware of this article. they had this statement ready to roll, and I received it this afternoon via email. So, you know, there is no truth behind the fact that this kid was Jewish. There is no truth behind the fact that any member of his family was Jewish, and there is certainly no truth behind the fact that this killing or assassination attempt had anything to do with anti-Semitism, let alone politics. This was nothing more than some nut with a gun. And you know, this is the United States, and we have seen our fair share of nuts with guns, and this is no different than the guy in the bell tower in Texas or any other nut that decides to just go off one day. And the more we learn about Jared Loughner, the more we're going to find out he was some nut that had access to a weapon. And that's going to be the bottom line.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I was on a high note there. You thought I was going to continue.
No, I mean, and that's what it comes down to is, and that's, you know, what these people did. And I'm telling you, because I was reading through their thread. I was reading through. I even sat down and listened to his radio show. Like I said, I feel very dirty and smarmy and gross. Oh, it was bad. Because it was a white supremacist.
A shocker.
And that's the whole thing. A lot of white supremacists were picking up on this story, and they're spreading this rumor as fact. And they're creating even more rumor to the whole thing. To they're expanding on it, and they're making it much, much, much worse. All for the sake of not appearing that it is a white guy that attacked a Jewish person.
Yeah, and by the way, the person in the chat room that said that he ran through the Walgreens, the actual 911 call said that he was running towards the Walgreens. I don't think he ever made it that far because he was tackled at the scene, as somebody else stated there. But if it was sarcasm, I apologize for reading what you wrote. But I thought you were being serious. The whole thing behind this whole left right away jumping on the bandwagon, because they've just been waiting for something to happen where it wasn't someone from the left that created it. All over Facebook and the media 2 days ago, they had statements saying that he was a registered Republican. Then the other side had screenshots of his registration card off of the Arizona website of their electoral website showing where he was not a registered Republican, he was a registered Democrat. Well, I looked into that too. It turns out he was neither. He was actually a registered independent. But that is irrelevant, has nothing to do with any of this, because any one of us could go out tomorrow and change our registration like that. It takes
nothing. And it doesn't matter what you're registered with necessarily, because when it comes down to your private vote, that's for you to know.
Right.
And that's
my point is, Reese, is right away the left was saying, and when I say the left was saying, Sheriff Dopnik, who I'll call him rather than Dupnik, from Pima County, was the first one out there when I saw his first press conference, and he started going off on the right-wing talk shows and the right-wing television stations without mentioning them by name. Gee, you think he might be talking about Fox News and Rush Limbaugh? I wonder. You know, saying that all this rhetoric and all this violent talk. No, let me remind people, I'm going to give you some quotes here, okay? If they bring a knife, we bring a gun. You know who said that? President Obama during his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you some other quotes. Get out there and punish our enemies. You know who said that? President Obama.
He wasn't talking about those that are attacking us.
I don't want to quell anger. I think people have a right to be angry. I'm angry, our president. Punch back twice as hard, our president. I want to know whose ass to kick, our president. I'm itching for a fight, our president. So don't give me that it's always the right that creates this violence. I am sick and tired of hearing that. I stood with Reese at 8:28 when there were over a million people on the mall, and if anything, all we saw was an outpouring of support for your fellow man and total strangers. Reese could tell you a story of how she and I were late because we stopped to help people, two different people, who almost passed out in the grass, and the amount of people that ran over to help a total stranger. There was no violence, there was no anger, and at every single Tea Party gathering nationwide, there has yet to be a iota of proof that there was anything even said that was violent. But yet you look at the left and listen to what they say. I am sick and tired of them twisting the truth to try and make it look like it's us conservatives that are doing this, when in reality they're the ones doing it and then pin it to us.
Oh, and to clarify on that site that I was reading, the where they were spreading the rumor, and that's what I'm going to leave it as until there is actual fact of any kind, which you've already cleared from you know contacting the synagogue yourself. But the site that I was reading the thread through, the rumor that were spreading this rumor and getting really excited because they're getting lots of hits and stuff, they're not right wing. They certainly don't like the Tea Party people when they're calling them tea baggers and a few other things. And so it's not right wing there. I'm not sure. I think I saw a few nationalists and a few communists and German nationalists there, and it's like I said, I feel very dirty, and I can't wait to take a shower. It was not pleasant reading through there for the sake of research I did, and it was, not good.
Somebody call me. Have we not given our number out enough? 347-857-1380. Sorry, I haven't come up with a jingle for it yet. Somebody call in and give me your opinion. I see a whole bunch of people talking about this in the chat room. Somebody was just mentioning that the bullets were purchased at Walmart. Maybe we should just shut all the Walmarts down now. Somebody call me and tell me what you think about this. This is, you know, we've got 20 minutes left, and I really want to get into this. Am I the only one that sees things this way, that the left are the ones that are out there that are inciting this, and right away they blame the right? How do we go from a tragedy, from a senseless murder, to calling, and that's the other thing, calling it terrorism, which it wasn't, calling it, you know, a right-wing conspiracy, which it wasn't, blaming Sarah Palin? I mean, this is ridiculous. This is this the point we've gotten to in this country, that an hour or two after a tragedy, right away we're going to start pointing fingers rather than worrying about a 9-year-old girl that was murdered and her family?
Well, exactly. I mean, we even had Freedom Wings, you know, maybe she can call in and talk about it, because she was breaking it on her show Saturday when we were over there listening to her show. And, you know, it was just amazing watching it unfold, because it kept, you know, it started out with, you know, immediately the news hit, and everybody jumped the whole bandwagon of that Gabrielle was killed. And then just kept going from there. And, you know, as the news was falling open and more information was coming out, it was just bizarre. And then within moments, literally within moments, it was just all the vitriol was just spewing everywhere. It's like pea soup and head spinning.
Yeah.
You know, the blame game started, and it was all them teabaggers and them Tea Partiers and all them white ring extremists and you know, it's like, wait a minute, you know, it's one loon. It's a loon. It's a guy who is unhinged. One person.
Finally, someone has the guts to call in, and I'm not even going to bother to screen the call. I'm just going to go ahead and open their mic up here and see. Hello, caller.
Yes, sir.
How you doing? Give me your opinion on this whole situation, please. Fill us in.
My opinion is quite different.
Oh, let's hear it, please.
I believe that this is all happening to pass the pre-crime law.
Which, in reference to guns?
In reference to anything. In reference to the fact that in February of 2010, they start putting aboard the pre-crime law. Not many people watch the news about it, but that's pretty much where, if they think that you are going to commit a crime, they will lock you up and prolong detention.
This is what Obama was
talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. Yes. So,
okay.
But that's the case. Let's say you're right, and let me play devil's advocate here. Are you saying that they got this kid to go out there, this Jared Loughner, to do this, and he's a patsy?
No. I'm not saying they had Jared go out there. I don't believe Jared went out there to do anything.
Do you believe that he wasn't the shooter?
I know he wasn't the shooter.
All right, then if Jared wasn't the shooter, who was with all the people that were witnesses there? Because now we're talking about a conspiracy that goes beyond two people. We're talking about a conspiracy of, you know, dozens of people.
Okay. If you listen to one of the 911 clips, and there's a person who did a show today about this entire thing, and they broke down this entire story to the point that there's no way you can believe it's real. Even in one of the 911 clips, the caller, which, of course, when there's a script, they always mess up. The caller says something like, the guy that looked like the guy that had the gun ran.
Right.
The guy that looked like the guy that had the gun ran. Pretty much saying that another person did the shooter that looked like the shooter took off running, which
right.
is the first thing I thought about. Is first, as soon as I heard this story, of course, I didn't believe it. I believe that someone else did this crime who they staged to look like the bald-headed man that they have smiling in this photo. And I believe it's also all a setup. I don't believe it's true.
Now, why hasn't Jared Loughner's defense attorney come out with any of this? Why hasn't he bothered to speak up? Because so far he's maintained his right of silence and not said a word to anybody and sat there with that smirk on his face.
Well, who sat there with a smirk on their face?
Jared Loughner, if you look at the photograph they took for his mother.
And who gave you that photo?
That would be the media.
Exactly.
Okay.
Who gave you the photo of the underwear bomber?
Oh, so you don't believe the underwear bomber is the right guy either?
Who gave you the photo of the Times Square bomber?
We're getting into deep, deep, deep conspiracy theories now.
Gave you the photo of the Fort Hood shoulder. Have you ever seen these people's body move one time in your life on television? Have you ever seen the person, not a photo, have you ever seen their body in movement on video?
Well, actually, I have. The Fort Hood shooter, there's quite a bit of video of him.
Please show it to me because I've never seen it.
Even the morning of the shooting where he stopped into a 7-Eleven, as he did like every morning to get whatever it was he was getting.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about after the crime happened, specifically meaning maybe him being arrested or him going to court at, you know, he's had court dates or anything. Not saying, you know, the camera's in the court, just, you know, because I've seen federal crimes where you do see the person going to court. A lot of people will deny that. Let's look at the D.C. sniper case. That is the last time I've actually seen someone actual body in a case of this magnitude. That's the last time the D.C. sniper, I've actually seen the person after the crime happened.
What
do you mean? The person, the criminal, the one that was accused? Is that what you mean?
The so-called suspect, yes. That's what I mean.
Have we seen them since?
Have you seen them? Have you seen this person's body?
Yes, I have seen them.
Who?
Well, you pulled up the DC snipers.
Yes,
that was actually very close to my heart because my husband was driving that route daily.
Oh, I understand that, ma'am. And yes, that is true. What I am saying to you is we did see much video of the DC snipers going to jail, going to court. There was much video of that because that was actually the real suspect. These were the real suspects. That's the last time I personally have seen real suspects. Ever since then, all I have seen is photos.
So are you claiming that Jared Loughner doesn't exist, or are you claiming that this is some poor slob that got caught in the middle of something else?
I'm claiming, well, do we know that the photo is the actual person? I don't know, because what I can tell you that I'm not going to believe anything that the media says. I'm not going to believe anything that's written down in a news media's website, and I'm not going to believe anything that's said on the television. I just find
a lot of the
crap
that's going on.
Have you taken a
trip out to
Arizona
and sat in the courtroom and spoken to people that are there?
What was that, ma'am?
Have you gone to Arizona, sat in the courtroom, and, visited with people that were there, that are there, and watched for yourself. Can you say for an absolute, without a single doubt, that he is not for real who he is?
Well, have you seen him go to court? Or have you just listened to the news and listened to what they told you?
No, but now you're making the implication that every single news agency is in on the same conspiracy because they do have reporters that are sitting in the courtroom. But all that aside, the day of the shooting in Arizona, if you remember, they initially thought that there might have been a second suspect. And there was even for a short time, a couple of hours, a photograph of him standing inside the Safeway. It was an older gentleman with salt and pepper hair, and it turned out they said he was a taxi driver. I can believe that there might have been a second shooter. I did hear the 911 calls, not necessarily a shooter, but an accomplice. I did hear the 911 calls where they weren't sure if someone had driven him there and who that other individual might have been. That I can buy. But to believe that every single person that happened to be in the parking lot that day just going shopping is going to be part of this conspiracy is a little bit beyond.
Well, first of all, you didn't hear every single person. You heard who you heard. Just because there were a bunch of people there, you didn't hear everyone there. You heard who you heard, which is what you heard on the news claiming to be a witness. History shows that witnesses are staged and paid.
Well, you're talking about dozens of witnesses because I did see dozens of different people that were at...
You've seen dozens of different people. Did you hear dozens of different people?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, on the news. With all the different channels I watch and all the different internet video websites that I go to, personally, I saw over a dozen different witnesses speaking on camera, real live people, about what they experienced and what they saw as they were, for whatever reason, going to the Safeway that day, whether they were going to see the congresswoman or whether they were going shopping or whether they were just there meeting friends, which one guy was actually just there meeting some friends. I saw over a dozen different people.
I mean, that's the great thing about this country. You know, we all have our own opinion. And based upon the history over the last 10 years, I absolutely will not believe the case at all. If they pull off what they did on 9/11, this is nothing compared to 9/11.
That's a scary way to go through life if you're not going to believe anything. Go ahead, Reese.
TCS, I have a question for you. You know what we were talking about earlier, that, you know, there is a rumor being spread around that Jared is was Jewish, and it was more of a Jewish on Jewish crime. Are you going to would you buy that more?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that one more time?
You know how we were discussing. Yeah, that's all right. You know how earlier we were discussing about the rampant viral rumor that's going around that Jared was Jewish, and it was a Jewish on Jewish crime. And do you buy that?
Of course not. Of course not. Listen, the easiest way to brainwash a community to accept a law that they want you to accept that's coming soon is to stir up as much drama. Sarah Palin is the gut soul of this because Sarah Palin is designed to drive America crazy back and forth. Her and Glenn Beck are planet souls to drive America's brains crazy. That's what their job is. When it comes to this whole Jewish thing, I mean, I was listening to a show earlier where the guy made sense. They said he has a YouTube clip of him burning American flags or whatever. But at the same time,
I actually got that clip before.
Did you see his face?
Did I see his face? No, he had it covered up with a mask.
Okay, well,
they'll
always play these games.
Right.
Wait. By saying that Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin are plants, you're going back an awful lot of years for them to want to do something now, because Glenn Beck, prior to being on Fox News for the last 2.5-3 years, was on Headline News with his own show, and prior to that did radio. Sarah Palin started in Wasula, Alaska, as a county board member on their school district. As far as her political, you know, her politics started 20-plus years ago. So you're talking about they planted this woman 20 years ago?
I'm not saying they planted them 20 years ago. All I can speak for is what I see. And what I see is two people who are very good at what they do. Just like you were talking about Sarah Palin a few minutes ago, and listen, it's they know how to trick people into hating each other, into starting to gossip, to argue, to complain, to want to hate people. They are using this woman to do this. They're using her to do this.
I have another question. This is actually interesting about conspiracy theories. There is a theory out there that Barack Obama is using a form of hypnotism, and that is how he was able to get so many votes and got elected as president. Do you buy that theory?
You said form of hypnotism?
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama was already president before he was even on his campaign trail.
Wow. Okay.
That's the truth. Barack Obama is.
I was curious if you knew about that and if you bought that theory.
No, I wouldn't buy that because Barack Obama was president while he was on his bus going around America asking people to vote for him. He was already president. He's been picked to be the president and to do his job, just like Bush was. It's what it is. You know, we can sit in life and continue to always worry about why does this keep happening every time we vote for these people and they say they're going to do this. Why does these things keep happening? It happens because it's designed to happen. It doesn't matter who you vote for. Nothing will happen for the better. Only thing that will happen is for them to continue to fund their pockets and to take control of their policies, what they want. That's the truth.
If that's the case and you're right, then it's going on all over the world under every political system there is in every country throughout the world, because this goes on day in and day out, unfortunately, throughout the world. And what you're saying is there's no point in us even voting. There's no point in picking our representatives. There's no point in even worrying about the future because it's all written out for us and we have no say in the matter. That's a heck of a way to go through life. I'm sorry that you believe that. Obviously, you're going to find people that agree and people that disagree. Unfortunately for you, I disagree. We've only got a few minutes left on the show, and I want to thank him for calling in. That took a lot of guts for him to call in and give us his theory. Whether or not there was more than one person, an accomplice, whether Jared was the shooter or not, I still think it's a senseless, horrible, horrible tragedy. Call it what you will. I just hope that the fighting back and forth and trying to use this tragedy as a way of saying, we need to, stop the freedom of speech that we have in this country, which is basically what they're trying to do with this. You know, the rhetoric is coming from the right and the rhetoric is coming from the left. Enough. We need, if we want to disagree on our politics, that's fine. And when we start getting into the political, beyond mudslinging, the political killing of each other, which is basically what's happening now, where they're starting to point fingers and blaming that this individual went out and killed 6 people and injured 14 others because of something that someone may have said on talk radio or Sarah Palin may have used a poster is ludicrous. It's totally ludicrous. And, I welcome anybody to come on like the previous gentleman did and give us their thoughts. We've only got about 3 minutes left. Reese, sum it up for me. Tell me what you think about that last caller.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm not a conspiracy theorist per se, and actually I'm kind of an anti-conspiracy theorist. Unfortunately, in this day and age, there's been a lot of bizarre things that have happened. I don't believe in coincidences of any kind. I do believe everything happens for a reason. But, and some of these things that have been happening in the past few years, it's hard not to come up with some kind of, feel like a conspiracy theorist. It's all a conspiracy when it can be, not proven. So I don't know. Do I buy what he was saying? No. Everybody has their opinion. Everybody comes to their own conclusions from their own research. This Jared Lochner did. He apparently found a video. I think it was I'm even going to save the video because it just, you know, they're trying, we don't necessarily want the video taken off, even though I totally think it's a ridiculous video. Yes, I have watched it. And apparently the video was very important to this kid, and he was messed up. He was drugged out, according to the reports, and he was mentally, emotionally disturbed. He was anti just about anything he can be anti against. The closest thing to him that I could come up with would be he was an anarchist. He was just a disturbed individual, and he was taking his angst out on others that had no business being taken out on. He just, you know, it's just how it is. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, and hopefully our politicians don't choose to take this and turn it into a political football and try to take away of our liberties, like they've already been talking about taking, delving in more of the Second Amendment rights, but also the First Amendment rights are also getting pushed on now too.
Yeah, well, let's not forget, in the United States, we still have a constitution, you know, that talks about the fact that we are innocent until proven guilty. I don't think that the United States would ever allow a pre-crime law to come about. I hope that it stays that way. I do know what he's referring to when he talks about that. But I can't believe that all, you know, that's the only conspiracy theory that I can believe in. So, you know, be that as it may. Regardless, you know, we can end the show with less than a minute left of everybody just please continuing your thoughts and prayers for everyone that was affected by this, be it by injury or by death, and pull together as a group and as a country. And, you know, maybe we can use this as a turning point, and people like Christina Green, who's only 9 years old, her death will not have been a total waste. Because I think that we're going to go and that it's just going to remain the same or even get worse. Please look for us again next Thursday evening right here from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And we will see everybody next week. Say goodnight, Reese.
Goodnight, Reese.
Everybody take care. We are off the air.
Holger was like, extend the show, extend the show. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. We'll have to learn how to do that for those days that we have something good going on.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't extend it.
Well, you can. There is a way to extend it. I just don't know how.
Oh, there is?
So, yeah, there is a way to extend it. I just don't know how. So we'll have to figure out how to do that.
I know how. It's just a pain in the butt to go into a different screen and try and do it before the show ends. You got to have that idea like 5 minutes in advance, not 30 seconds. But
well, that was an interesting show, hon.
It was an interesting show. Wow. Talk about going through life not believing anything.
But my head is spinning. Yeah.
I have a feeling that I didn't get a chance to say this on the air, but those listening to the remaining part that we're recording right now, I have a feeling that this is one trial where we will see him going in and out of the courtroom, be it, you know, surrounded by U.S. Marshals in a bulletproof vest or not. And once he's in the courtroom, I really hope that Larry Burns, which is the judge that is taking on this case, allows cameras in the courtroom. Because this is too big of a incident where they wouldn't. So we shall see what happens.
Yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to watch this play out. Hopefully it doesn't become a complete three-ring circus.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it will. I was worried when I first heard that Larry Burns was appointed to the case because he's a California judge, and I know how the California judges are. But this guy happens to be a federal judge that was appointed by Bush, so hopefully he's not a wacko and it's not going to be another OJ trial.
That's can always hope.
If you're unaware of it, all the chief justices and judges in Arizona that would have been handed this case, every single one of them excused himself from the case saying that they, because they were friends with Judge John Roll, they couldn't be fair and impartial. And I thought that that was pretty amazing that every one of them came forward and said, nope, I can't do it because he was a friend of mine. And that shows the true judicial
system. That takes a lot of integrity right there.
Exactly. So they had to go nearby from a federal bench, and that was Judge Larry Burns out of California. So we'll see what happens in the weeks to come. And you, I will see offline. I'm going to shut this down so that we don't have to record anymore. Thank you again for a wonderful show.
Oh, thanks. You did most of the work. I just hung out.
Yeah. Tom Trento did all the work. All right. Well, Reese, you take care, sweet pea, and I will see you next Thursday.
Okay. Hi, Daddy. Well, sooner, but yeah.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.